From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, April 21st, 2009. Each week, this podcast examines news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, executive editor of Directions Magazine and chief blogger at All Points Blog in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, editor-in-chief and vice publisher in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, we look at some new and old terms creeping into and out of our conversations about location technology. You heard about hybrid GIS or dislocation intelligence. What words stay with us and which ones disappear? We'll take a snapshot of our geospatial lexicon after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Quickly get your imagery to the people who need it with ArcGIS Server Image Extension. For more information, visit www.esri.com/image.
Now, I've got to admit it. I am an industry watcher, and I have been for many years now. And one of the things that I look at and tune into is the language that we use to talk about geospatial technology, its data, its architecture, and the trends surrounding it. And the terms that we use come from a variety of places. Probably the most prominent are these marketing terms that come about because a vendor wants to use them to capture an idea and own an idea. Others are invented, some are taken from academia. And what I want to do today is to look at some recent additions to our lexicon and think about if they'll, in fact, stick with us or not. And I want to look back at some terms that were introduced in the past and see how they've stood the test of time. Now, I want to start with a term that I think of as an old term, maybe with a new meaning. And I found this term in a press release from a company called ISC. And this is related to a presentation that one of the representatives is giving at GITA coming up this week. The term is hybrid GIS, and here is the definition. Hybrid GIS is the merging of traditional geographic information systems with the new product and services of the GeoWeb. And that's kind of interesting because you kind of get a twofer. You get hybrid GIS and you get GeoWeb. And I'm going to flip GeoWeb aside for the moment. We'll come back to it later. And That definition sort of surprised me because the term hybrid GIS to me relates to a whole bunch of other ideas of hybrid, in particular the merging of raster and vector together. That's a term we've used for quite some time. It's also a new definition of that the Googles and the Microsofts have taken to use for their consumer-facing portals where they put down the imagery and then lay on top the streets and label. It's also a term I've heard used to talk about the combination of a closed-source stack and an open-source stack, you know, an implementation. And if you go way back, it's also a term that was used when we talked about storing the spatial location in one way and the attribute information in another way. Today, more and more, we're storing both of those together in a relational database. But back then, that was a hybrid model for GIS data storage. So this new definition just didn't quite work for me. How did it work for you?
No, I think it's great marketing spin. I'm not sure it's going to stick. And I would go to a more real-world example and using the term hybrid. We often hear it used today when we think of hybrid cars, the mixing of the traditional gasoline-powered engine and that of electric-powered cars. And that's kind of a mixing of separate and distinct technologies. When you talk about hybrid GIS, it doesn't really have much meaning because you stick on the word or the acronym GIS on the end and it's all kind of the same. Maybe the best example that you gave is the mixing of two different data formats of raster and vector within our technology domain. Yeah, those are probably the two most distinct data formats, and so it would be a hybrid data model. I don't think it would be a hybrid GIS.
Maybe what you're suggesting is that there isn't a sharp enough line between the traditional technologies and these new products and services to even say that they're pulling together two different things. Is that fair?
Yeah, and really, I think what you want to do is you want to draw a very sharp line of distinction. If you want to say hybrid technology solution, you might think of a business intelligence solution and a geographic intelligence solution. So that would be more hybrid to me.
I think based on what I read in the press release and further discussion here, what they were really trying to get at was this combination of sort of a back end of a traditional GIS database or a analytical services with a front end visualization. That's the new thing. That's maybe what's happening here. So maybe the hybrid GIS isn't quite the right term, but it's sort of a different kind of stack of technology. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that one's going to stick. Now, you ran into some terms related to business geographics this past week, too, that were sort of new, right?
Yeah, one of the things I came across this week was a term called dislocation intelligence, and it is essentially applying location technology to getting out of a market. In other words, if in these tough economic times there are stores closing, there are retail centers that are not doing very well, and so companies are looking to disassociate themselves or look at ways to exit the market or finding other places in which to move their business. So kind of extracting themselves from the market, and the term they're using being dislocation. I think it also has a double meaning in that, again, given the current economic situation, we are all a bit dislocated in terms of our footing in the market and financially. So I thought it was a great term.
Right, and it's sort of like the inverse of an awful lot of the work of business GIS is finding the right place for whatever it is you're going to create. And this is the opposite of that. It's which ones do we remove? geography.
Yeah, and I think because we have put a lot of emphasis and investment from our end in the term location intelligence, it was kind of neat to see a spin on that phrase. Actually, it really helps us in terms of marketing the things that we do and we like to talk about, just because somebody has recognized the fact that location intelligence is now one of those words or phrases that is now ingrained in our technology lexicon.
Such that the opposite of it is also valuable. And I think that's also just a clever turn of phrase as well. So that will maybe stick with us. Another phrase that I came across this week at a website that I keep an eye on called World Changing was a description of a neighborhood. And it's called a 20-minute neighborhood. And I love that because it describes a geography not in terms of space but in terms of time. Which is it's a great turn of phrase, and I think it has a meaning even before I define it. I think you have a sense of what that might be, but let me give you the definition, again, from a series of articles at World Changing. It's a term to describe a place where a person can access all the places they like or need to go in no more than a 20-minute walk. And that... I like to think that it puts a picture in your head. Maybe you've been to a place that's like this. A densely packed city is a perfect example, and I live in one of those. And I'll even suggest that this definition may even be a bit too radical to find a location where all of the places you'd like or need to go are within a 20-minute walk. I think in today's modern society is kind of a stretch. I think if you could get 50, 60, 70% of the places you needed or wanted to go, and somewhere further afield, that would be a great thing, too. So I think this is a keeper. I just love this term.
Yeah, I like it as well, and really has lots of geospatial overtones. We often think of 20-minute drive times or kind of a drawing a geofence. I think this is a great way for marketers to think of how they could describe some of these more compact neighborhoods. And it actually made me harken back to a time when I was a kid and went to go stay at my aunt's house. And within a block, you went to the local grocery store. You know, in the old days, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and even growing up where I did in the 60s, you still had these neighborhood convenience stores, which, of course, have now been almost gone. And turned into something more like a C store at a major intersection, and so you don't find many of these things outside of the dense urban centers, such as you mentioned.
Yeah, the other way I hope that this term will be used is as a really positive way to market areas. I've got a bunch of friends right now who are looking to move or buy houses now that there are some available at reasonable prices. And you know, they're very concerned about certain aspects of the location, but wouldn't it be great to be able to market a neighborhood? This is a 20-minute neighborhood. This will take care of your needs.
No, I think a lot of this was also brought up last summer when gas prices were over $4 a gallon and people were looking to move back into the urban centers such that you could get to most of your conveniences within a 20-minute walk. You wanted to get to your mass transit very quickly to get to your job. So I think it's a great term, and as you said, for marketers, whether you're selling a house or whether you're looking to define some of the terms that we're going to get into next about market segmentation, I think it's a great, great descriptive term to use.
Okay, well, let's head into market segmentation. That's something you keep an eye on.
Yeah, a term, market segmentation, looking at the broad picture of characteristics of a market of similar criteria. In other words, if you're going into a suburban area, you want to look for a similar income stream, similar purchasing patterns, again, similar education levels, all of the demographic criteria that helps you define a market. Well, the term I came across this week was called self-segmentation. And I think a lot of it referred to things that we come to refer to in a more mobile society, and also kind of the self-awareness situation where, and the example that I read was, you know, you can be the IT specialist during the day at your workplace. You can be the father of the year type at night. You could be engaged in intramural sports. You are a lover of fine wine. It was kind of these things where you shouldn't have to be defined by an aggregate market. So people, I think, want to take it upon themselves, and we have certainly the social media these days to get that information out there about how to describe yourself. And the other part of that is when a lot of these marketers talk about one-to-one marketing, you want to go directly from the consumer goods manufacturer to the individual purchaser. Again, you want to have a good idea of who that person is. And now with location-based advertising, it's even a finer definition. You not only want to know the guy's interest, but you want to know where he is. So this self-segmentation term I thought was kind of interesting in describing really the evolution from my mass marketing approach to a one-to-one marketing approach.
And I think this whole idea of defining yourself to the market as opposed to the market telling you who you are and what you might be interested in purchasing is strangely appealing and a little bit scary to the consumer. But if people do start participating in these location-based social networks where they're sharing their location with people and companies, you can really define quite a lot about yourself based on where you go. If you go to if you live here in Boston and you go to Fenway Park 3 or 4 times a month during the baseball season, that says quite a lot about what you're interested in now, doesn't it?
With all of the means to express yourself on the web, whether you're a blogger or a Twitterer, and then to tie yourself to an individual location, again, I came across a Twitter feed yesterday called GeoFollow, in which you can put in a reference tag to your city, your state, your zip code. So there's a way for people to find you and to market to you. And I think it's important to remember, we're such at a nation stage of social networking and location-based advertising that I think it will become even more significant of this self-segmentation in the future.
Well, let's move from some newer terms to some older terms that we've seen in our recent past and maybe going back a few years. And one of the terms that I've been watching for some number of years was a term that Bentley sort of reintroduced to the market when they were working on their CAD-based GIS product called MicroStation Geographics, and I worked on that product briefly. And the term that they shared was the term geoengineering, which in some sense makes sense. Bentley is in the design space, that there is engineering going on. It certainly was in the GIS space, and you put those two together and you get geoengineering, which I was always uncomfortable with because geoengineering to me already had a meaning, and it was very far away from this combination that we were using sort of in the infrastructure, what we now call the infrastructure space. Because geoengineering to me had to do with engineering, changing the earth. And I was sort of reminded of the term just this week when I saw an article in Wired, on one of the Wired blogs, titled Report from Antarctica, Geoengineering on the High Seas. And it's about really changing a particular chunk of the sea called the Drake Passage between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans by steaming it with iron to stimulate biological activity such that it would soak up atmospheric carbon dioxide and potentially help mitigate climate change. Now that's geoengineering. And whether you're pro or con geoengineering, it seems very far away from a term that we might use for what we do with GIS, be it CAD-based or anything else. One that sort of seemed like a good idea at the time, but didn't quite catch on for that meaning.
Yeah, I think it was one of those terms that kind of had mixed messages. If you were outside of the realm of geospatial technology, you probably gave it the definition that you referred to. If you were inside the camp, maybe you could make that connection between geospatial analysis and civil engineering, and I think that's where the mixed messages came in. So it's probably one of those terms that's fallen by the wayside and maybe for the best.
Now, let's go back to a term that I brought up in that first definition, and let's talk about the geo-web.
Well, the geo-web was kind of made popular, or at least it was introduced by Galdos Systems. Am I right about that? Did they do that?
As a matter of fact, I this is actually a very old term.
Oh, it is?
And I didn't hear of it until my time at OGC. But in fact, it goes back to 1994 and a guy named Charles Herring, who worked at DOD. But we really sort of started picking that up in the, mid-2000s somewhere?
Yeah, when it got picked up was, again, with the introduction of people wanting to do something on the net with geospatial technology. And it's gotten kind of confused because you hear some people refer to it as the GeoWeb, as I mentioned with the Galdos' conference, and then other people who want to use the term WebGIS. And that's a term most often I've heard Jack Dangerman use at ESRI. And I think that we're confusing what was the original intent, or again, it's more of a marketing phrase, but the original intent is, can I do geospatial analysis on the Internet? You're going to have your own phrase, whichever you're vested in, but neither of those phrases, to me, really kind of gets at it, whether it's GeoWeb or WebGIS. It's just doing geospatial analysis on the Internet. So each of these companies are trying to play off of a marketing term. I'm not sure any of them are going to stick. Nice try at the time, but I don't know if it's one for the long term.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head that there's an awful lot of indecision, confusion, lack of clarity. There was a little discussion on Twitter just this week about people using the term and not knowing what it meant. And if you go and try to find a definition, you'll end up with one of them, the only one I think I found with a quick look, was on Wikipedia. And Wikipedia defines GeoWeb as the geospatial web, or GeoWeb, is a relatively new term that implies the merging of geographical, that is location-based, information with the abstract information that currently dominates the Internet. This would create an environment where one could search for things based on location instead of by keyword only. That's a little bit different, I think, than your vision of doing GIS analysis on the web. It's sort of one part of it, I guess, would be finding geographically tagged information. The idea that we need a separate word for this thing that is the geospatial web that separates it from the web itself has always bothered me, because it's not a separate thing. It's the web we've already got, but better, in a sense. So this idea that it's something special, and maybe it's only for special people who understand the secret code, no, that doesn't help. The whole point of the Internet, for me anyway, is that it's very open and very accessible to everybody. So we're making it better all the time by tagging things with geographic meaning, finding new ways to search with a geospatial parameter. That's all good. And that doesn't really need to be separated from the web. I think we do more damage by separating it.
I think one of the criteria you can use of whether a term is going to stick or not is, does it have meaning outside of our little profession, right? If you said that word to somebody outside, the geospatial domain, would it make sense to them?
Right. Would they have any idea what you were talking about?
Right, right. And this is kind of the thing that I go back to. If you mentioned the three little words GIS to somebody outside of GIS, would they have a clue? Which is why I started to use location and location intelligence. I think you understand the word location. You might understand the word when you put the word intelligence after it. You would probably be able to register a guess. I'm not sure you would do that with a term like GeoWeb or Web GIS.
That's a great sort of way to think about it. Yeah, if it's not well defined outside, it's probably not well defined inside.
Yeah, well, going back to what you were talking about with geoengineering, again, that could have many meanings if, again, outside of the realm. And I think the definition you had using the term geoengineering with respect to the study in Antarctica was very telling. You might come away from that thinking, oh, well, if I put those two together, he's reengineering the Earth. Again, people understand geo as a root of the term Earth, and so you may have to make some assumptions that weren't correct.
Right. Well, let's move to another term that I think causes some confusion inside and outside, and that's neogeography. Is that a term you find yourself using as we do our work and try to cover this industry?
Again, inside our profession, I would use it because it's become an accepted term, and so I don't have a problem using that to refer to some of the things, again, what we know as mashups or taking the new way of looking at geospatial visualization. So I don't have a problem using it. Again, you would probably not get a lot of interesting looks if you use it outside of our profession. Whether it's a sticker, whether it sticks around, I'm not sure. But I think for now it has legs only because it has a very narrow meaning, and I think people have come to accept that meaning.
Well, and I think this actually goes right back to our initial discussion of hybrid GIS, where the whole idea is bringing together sort of traditional technology with new technology, and you can define those however you like. And the problem for me is that at some level there's nothing new under the sun, and the term neogeography suggests that there's new geography, and there really isn't. The geography is the same. In fact, the things that we're trying to get at, the things that we're trying to understand, the things that we're trying to map, we're doing, I think, the same geography. We've got some new tools, and as you particularly pointed out, we've got some new visualization opportunities, which is great. But I think we're still doing geography. And sometimes, again, when you try to separate that from its core, it can do more harm than good. I mean, wouldn't it be scary if they had a student going into college and saying they wanted to study neogeography as opposed to geography? Does that help? No, you want to be grounded in the basics of geography from a variety of different perspectives, including cartography. And then, take a look at these new tools and see what you can do with them. That's great.
Yeah, I think what we're coming down to in this discussion is that some terms have legs because they do have a broader meaning. Other terms are more marketing spin. And that's where the distinction comes in, and depending on how much of an investment you make in these marketing terms will really determine if they're going to stick around for a long time.
That's all the time we have today. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like to invite you to attend one of ESRI's upcoming Creating Effective Web Maps seminars to learn how to create ArcGIS server map services with a focus on the new ArcGIS 9.3.1 tools. No-cost seminars are being held in select locations across the United States through June. You can reserve your seat at www.esri.com/webmaps. If you'd like to contact us about today's topic, maybe offer up some new terms that you think are going to stick or aren't going to stick, or some older terms that you're fond of or not so fond of, you can contact us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can also leave comments on the podcast page at All Points Blog or at Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.